There have been big developments this week in the high-stakes showdown over Detroit's pensioners, art treasures, and the creditors, hoping to pressure bankruptcy judge Stephen Rhodes to, in turn, pressure the city to put those art treasures on the table. There's a lot to sort out. So, as we do each Thursday, let us turn to Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes. And Daniel, it's gotten to the point where I think one could really use a business and finance degree to really understand all the elements involved in this evolving story.
Yeah, or you just have to understand the game of chicken. It's either or.
That's true. Well, let's start with the announcement from this group of creditors that they have proposals from private investors willing to pay, we read, up to $2 billion stake in the DIA's treasures. Can you spell this out for us?
Yeah, there's four different proposals that were put forth by a bond insurer out of New York called the Financial Guarantee Insurance Corporation. And two of them are based out of, one's in Hong Kong and the other is based out of Beijing, that would buy essentially pieces of the DIA, not the entire collection. And then you have two based out of New York that would essentially acquire all of the assets of the DIA, up to, as you said, $2 billion. Now, there's a lot of detail here. There's a lot of due diligence that would need to happen. Essentially, what they're asking is that the judge push the city into actually talking to these four groups and allowing them to do the due diligence. This would be in lieu of the so-called grand bargain financed by a dozen foundations, $350 million prospectively from the state, mm-hmm. and $100 million from DIA donors for a total of about $816 million. This bond insurer says that is an inferior deal. It wouldn't actually be $815 million for the pensioners, and that their deals are better and would be designed to support all unsecured creditors.
Well, when we talk about especially the offers where they would say, we were going to acquire the collection, is that meaning we're going to scoop up everything within the walls of the Detroit Institute of Arts and there would be no more DIA, or do they want it as collateral?
In the case of one called the Art Capital Group, the big one, the $2 billion one, they would essentially loan $2 billion against the entire collection, and the collection would stay in Detroit. At least that's what they're saying at this stage of the game. Now, a couple of the others are looking to acquire pieces. Mm-hmm. In one case, Poly International Auction out of Beijing is looking to acquire the Chinese collection within the DIA.
And what about that messy little thing that is not so little, where so many of those pieces were donated with the stipulation they can never be sold?
Well, they draw some question to whether that, in fact, is true. I think a lot of us have expected that this was going to happen.
Okay.
At some point, creditors who feel they're getting the shaft were going to say, now, wait a minute, there's a lot of stored value here, and we don't agree that the city has accurately valued the art. They draw some real big questions about the Christie's valuation, which we've talked about.
Yes.
Say that they've lowballed it. They didn't assess enough and appraise enough of the pieces. It was only 5% of the total collection of 66,000 pieces, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So I think now this goes before Judge Rhodes, and he has to decide essentially whether he is going to push the DIA and the city to actually dealing with these people, at least insofar as they would do any kind of due diligence. I think that's going to be very interesting to see. The creditors cannot force this like they could in a Chapter 11.
It's all up to Judge Rhodes.
It is, but even the judge cannot force the city to sell anything. In a Chapter 9 bankruptcy, the only entity that can decide whether it will sell an asset or liquidate an asset is the debtor, which in this case is the city, which is Kevin Orr, who works for the governor of the state of Michigan.
Meantime, this has to get pensioners thinking that there could be something beyond this so-called grand bargain. And isn't it understandable that retirees are reluctant to step out and support this grand bargain when they don't trust state lawmakers to then get on board that train? I mean, someone's got to blink here.
We had an interesting discussion earlier in the week with some members, people at the city, high-ranking officials, about kind of the details of the plan. And one of the points that they made was, you know, they kept making the point, the pensioners need to sign on here. And I said to them at one point, I said, sounds to me like you're putting the cart before the horse here. The legislature hasn't even acted. We don't expect the legislature to act until the end of May.
Yeah.
They said, that's true. However, the balloting process for pensioners is going to last for 2 months, starting May 1st and ending on June 30th. And their argument is that they're going to have clarity, the pensioners will have clarity on the state's action roughly right in the middle of that, because the governor has looked at this and said, this is part of the budgeting process. This budget has got to be done by June 1st.
Okay.
So they should have clarity as to whether or not that money is in fact going to materialize, and therefore will be able to make their decisions accordingly. Now, obviously, there's, I would think a vast majority of pensioners are not going to vote until they get some clarity on that, and I think people understand that. This is a very tight timetable. There's no question about it. But the other thing that's really important for people to understand, if the pensioners, the two classes who are voting on this, vote no on this grand bargain, that money disappears. It's not, it doesn't stay out there, and it can't somehow be used in a cram down, for example, where the judge orders a settlement on all of the creditors. Why? Because the foundations are not part of this. They are outside parties, so they can't be affected by a cram down. So if they were to say, no, we reject this plan, we think we're going to get better farther down the road, I think the evidence suggests that it won't. In these kinds of things, it usually only gets worse. It doesn't get better. And you really don't know what would happen with these other four proposals. Two of them we know already would break up the collection. And clearly that is something that a lot of people don't want to see happen.
I'm speaking with Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes as we look at the unfolding developments in the Detroit bankruptcy. And let's talk now about what's seen as kind of a win for Kevin Orr, and also probably somewhat of a win for this group of general obligation bondholders. They're now going to get 74 cents on the dollar. What happened here?
Now, this gets very complicated.
Yes, it does.
But initially, in his most recent plan, he said that these people would get 15 cents on the dollar. Now, you would say, well, if they were going to get 15, now they're going to get 74. They're getting a lot better. The difference is that under the new scenario that he announced this week, they have a claim to certain tax revenue from the city. And he acknowledges that they have a strong argument that if he would have tried to push through this 15% haircut that he originally proposed, he was likely to lose that argument. What he went to them and said is if you give us a portion of that revenue that we can then funnel into what is roughly a $100 million fund to benefit pensioners, we'll have a deal. And they said, okay. So they're essentially giving him a piece of that revenue, about roughly 24% of that revenue, that he is then using to create a fund to benefit pensioners, specifically a $50 million fund to benefit the people who have the lowest income of pension income, who if their pensions do in fact get cut as proposed, they could be bumping close to the federal poverty line.
Yes.
And the governor does not want that. The city does not want that because of, A, what it implies, and, two, what it could ultimately cost the taxpayers, because those folks would then get other kinds of subsidies or need other kinds of subsidies from the taxpayer. So this is a fund that would essentially be used to bolster them. The net effect is that you get roughly another $100 million that gets laid on top of the 816 from the DIA fund. So now you're starting to approach $1 billion. And I think they feel that that's going to be somewhat competitive, if you will, with some of these other proposals that are out there. And clearly, this one's a lot farther down the road and a lot more developed, absent the state piece, than the other four that have just been proposed.
It certainly does prove, though, that these offers to creditors are fluid and can change.
Oh, I think we are at a point right now, Cynthia, where this changes on a daily basis. And people are in a deal-cutting mode. One of the things we've learned about bankruptcy in a context like this is you oftentimes fare better as a creditor by cutting your own deal than either A, waiting for a ruling from a judge, or B, potentially being on the short end of the stick in a cram-down where in this context, Kevin Orr would use the deals that he already has in place as the lever to get the judge to impose a deal on everybody else. So you're generally in a better situation if you cut your deal in advance of that than if you wait to see what happens, which I think is really the big risk that pensioners need to think about. If they reject this DIA fund, the question is what comes after that?
Right.
You know, they've already told them that the numbers and the cuts get worse without this money. Now, they could say, well, if we reject the DIA fund, maybe we'll get one of these other one of these other four offers will come through. I suspect that given the way Chapter 9 bankruptcy works, that's a pretty tall order, but we have to really wait and see. And that's, I think, going to be the real challenge.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel House with our Thursday check-in. Lots to talk about and lots to keep our eye on. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Thanks for having me.